Welcome back to Matchroom Radio. I am David Diamante. I'm your host. And this is the third and final week of Fight Week. And we're here recording live from Brentwood, Essex, England. And I'm really delighted today to be joined by Mikey, the problem, undefeated, McKinson, and his pops, Michael Ballingall, also his trainer. He's worn many different hats in the boxing game. And we'll get to that in a little bit. These gentlemen reside in Portsmouth. And I'm really happy to have you both here. Great to see you, fellas. How you doing?
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here. Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, look, last time we were hanging out, we were on a yacht.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. It was a little bit different, you know? I mean, we were down in Gibraltar, and what a huge night for you, man.
Massive.
Huge opportunity, right?
Massive opportunity. For a long time, I wanted more opportunity on that big stage, and it was getting to a point where I didn't think it was going to come. And then I got the phone call, will you fight Chris Congo in, I think it was 6 weeks at the beginning. I said yes straight away, and then we had the bonus of 3 added weeks and a free holiday as well. So I had a brilliant, brilliant weather. I've had a good 2021.
Yeah, I mean, it was brilliant. And your performance was also, I think, brilliant. I would say that, because that fight, you know, that was one of the fights that I just really was looking forward to. Two undefeated welterweights, obviously a domestic clash. You guys are just both so, what's the word? People don't want to fight you. Avoided. Mm-hmm. You're like two of the most avoided fighters in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a fight that took a lot of balls to take. And that's one thing I love about you, man. You got a big balls. Set of balls. Yeah, you really do. It's not just that you have balls. You believe in yourself. You truly do. And you have the skills to back it up. I love that name, The Problem, because, you know, I feel like for other people, you are a problem. But I think we could name you The Problem Solver, because you've been able to solve a lot of these guys that seem pretty dangerous. And, you know, you have another one coming up, obviously, this weekend with Przemyslaw Ronowski. Tough Polish fighter. But, yeah, that was a great fight. I mean, Congo was just coming off that win with Luther Clay, right?
Yeah.
What was your mindset going into that fight?
There was a lot. Chris Congo's a good fighter, but there was a lot of hype around him. Like, the only decent win he had was Luther Clay, and no disrespect to Luther Clay, I'm levels above that. So as soon as we got given the fight, I knew I could beat Chris Congo. Well-prepared Michael McKinson beats him. Not many people believe me, hence why a little bit after the fight, I was a little bit emotional and a bit animated after, and that was just like a big middle finger to all of the people that thought I would lose, you know, because there was quite a few. Like, I was looking on...
I think you were the underdog in that fight.
I was the underdog. My friends earned a lot of money on me. But, yeah, like, even on Fight Week, I was looking on Twitter and all of, like, the polls and stuff like that. Nobody thought I'd win, really, in the boxing world. So that's why I knew I'd win. Like, my team knew I could win, and so did, like, people in my city, but not many people else in the boxing world. So that win meant a lot to me.
Yeah, you're very proud of Portsmouth, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, and especially as I'm getting a bit more success and stuff, they really do get behind me. Over the last 18 months, they haven't been able to travel and watch me fight. And I know my support has grown so much in that time. So I can't wait for them to be able to come and support me again, because they're very loud and they're very proud, and everyone will hear that soon, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Michael, I'm curious, because you were born in Naples, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
So you're half Italian, half Jamaican.
Well, technically, I'm not half Italian, because my mum's Jamaican and my dad's English, but my dad was working out there, so
okay.
Myself and my brother were born there. But I've got a passion for Italy.
Okay, sure.
Italian thing, so yeah.
And New York.
New York as well.
Which I love. Yeah. I love the Cazals. You're rocking the Cazal frames.
That's it.
New York all day right there, you know?
Yeah.
I love that.
I've just got a love for it, because a lot of my family are from there. I've never been, believe it or not, but I know a lot about it and stuff, you know. So, but yeah, a lot of my family from my mum's side, McKinson's, they live in Flatbush in Brooklyn. So, yeah.
So you've never been to New York?
Never.
I have.
Yeah, he's been a couple of times. Michael has, and that sent him over there, and that, yeah. Well, he went over one time.
I went on a holiday, to New York.
This is an outrage, man. We got to get you over there. I mean, you and I have talked. You're like an expert on New York. You know a ton of stuff. And I live in Brooklyn, obviously. You talk about Flatbush. That's right down the street from me. You know, I'm in Bed-Stuy.
Yeah.
So I'm just a few neighborhoods down the street.
Bed-Stuy. Famous person come from there, didn't they?
Several.
Yeah.
Several. Several. a lot of famous people from there.
Yeah. Rappers.
A lot of famous rappers from Bed-Stuy. That is correct. You got a lot of famous people coming from Portsmouth, though.
Charles Dickens. Yeah. Peter Sellers, the actor.
Peter Sellers. Also, like Arnold Schwarzenegger used to live there for a
bit. That's correct, yeah. He used to train in the gym down in Albert Road. And if you go to the gym, it's still there. There's pictures of him when he was younger. I think he was studying in uni in Portsmouth.
Mm. And also, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Correct. You've done your homework, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the museum there, right, for Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, so... No, I don't know. Is there? Didn't know anything about that.
I think there's a little museum there.
Right, so Arthur Conan Doyle lived there. At the time, back in the day, it was a great place for sort of socialites and that to live. It was quite trendy back in the old days and that. And a lot of good people, a lot of famous people have passed through and lived there at a certain time in their life. The Sherlock Holmes, I can't think of it. One of the prime ministers was from Portsmouth as well. I think Callaghan or something like that.
Sure.
He was from Portsmouth, yeah.
So you also have the Isle of Wight is right there.
The Isle of Wight. Do you know what? Years ago, I've also got family in near Miami, Hollywood, Florida.
Okay, sure.
Hollywood, yeah. And I was over there, and I was at a church with my uncle.
Uh-huh.
And the only time I ever went to America... And there was a gentleman there, and he was saying, my uncle was introducing me to people, and obviously I'm from Portsmouth. No one knows where that is when you're living over there. And this gentleman said, I know that. That's near the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, you got to take a ferry. You take a ferry right there.
How did you know that? And he said, because I go to Cowes. I thought there's a thing called Cowes Week.
Okay.
And it's once a year, and everyone turns up in the big boats and join, and there's a drink. It's like a real nice thing to do sort of thing. And I just thought, how on earth did he ever know that? Like, that's how big it is. Little tiny place like that. And someone all the way in Florida knows what it is. So there you go, yeah.
Well, the Isle of Wight is, of course, worldwide famous for the music festival.
That's right, yeah.
And
yeah.
Obviously 1970 was the real year. 69, Dylan played.
Yes.
But 1970, it was Hendrix. Miles Davis. The Who
knows what you're talking about. I mean, it was more than me.
It was everybody, you know.
Yeah.
It's
still like that. Apart from COVID, before that, all my life, you at a certain time of the year when the festival's on, you get when it's finished, you get all of the student people, like thousands of them, all with their welly boots and stuff, just come back from the ferry, waiting to get picked up to go back home, just lying there with their sleeping bags and stuff like that, and tents and stuff like that, yeah.
Sure. Well, so supposedly back in the day, 1970, I guess, was the peak of the concert, and it was the most famous one. They said there was like 600,000 to 700,000 people in attendance, which is amazing.
Apparently it was the biggest ever gathering of a festival in history?
Well, no, that I would think would not be.
No.
No, I've been to bigger festivals than that. I've been to the Kumbh Mela in India, I think, is the largest human gathering on the planet.
Maybe
and I've
at
been
the time.
There.
Was it at the time? There's something about that.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, I'll tell you that. Yeah. I guess Parliament banned it until 2002. Yeah, they banned it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's back.
Yeah.
And this year it got postponed, but I guess it's gonna be Duran Duran and David Guetta and They're supposed to be.
I'm too old for all that stuff. I don't do that.
Mikey, what about you? Are you a music guy?
Duran Duran's 80s, Dad.
Yeah, they are. But Liam Gallagher's supposed to play.
Yeah, I've never been. I've never been to the Isle of Wight Festival, and it's literally just over the water from
it's,
us.
Yeah, it's a little. Yeah. But you've been to the Isle of Wight.
Oh yeah, I've been to the Isle of Wight a couple of times. Yeah.
You just never wanted to go, or
no? I've never really been to a lot of festivals, to be honest. I'm always in camp or stuff like that. When it's like the summer and there's a festival on and my friends want to go, I'm always in camp training for a fight.
So is that really what it is? It's just boxing is really, that's your life.
Yeah. I've never taken a break from boxing. Even as like a kid, as a teenager, I was always training for something. So never really done a lot. other than boxing.
The best time to do it is after your fight, then book a holiday and go and enjoy yourself. Because when you come back, it's back on again.
And that's it. It's hard, though, because you can't plan anything. Like, I book everything around my fights. So I won't know I'll be fighting until maybe 8 weeks before. So then I've got literally, like, that short space of time, that little window to be able to book something. In that time, all I really want to do is enjoy some food.
So when it's all over and you're retired, you can go and do all the things that you wanted to do. You know, there's only a short space in a boxing life, and you've got all the rest of your life to go and do that type of stuff. So,
indeed. But what was your first? How did you get introduced to it? I know it's kind of a family affair with you guys. I mean, Michael, you're obviously you were involved with boxing, and you boxed yourself. You, obviously, you didn't box pro, but you boxed.
In a very minor way. I didn't win anything when I boxed. I didn't win any titles or anything like that, but I was always a lover of boxing. But other things dragged me away from it. So when my kids were younger, I wanted them to do something. So obviously I was, by the time they was ready to box, I was already involved in it. I started off helping out a friend of mine who was a good fighter, Tony Oakey from Portsmouth.
Sure.
And he was signed with Frank Maloney at the time. And I moved into the area. We knew each other, and I moved into his area, and I was training in that. He came and knocked my door, and we started running together, and that's how it all started.
12-year pro, British Commonwealth champion.
Yeah.
Tony Oakey.
Yeah,
Pac-Man, really right? Called himself Pac-Man?
No. That's Floyd Moore.
Pardon me. Tony
Oakey. Okie Cokie, okay. So, he used to sell out the Mountbatten Centre in Portsmouth live on Sky.
Right.
He won the British title, Commonwealth title, and the prize fighter. Right. He won the prize fighter as well, light heavyweight. That's how I started with. That's about 20 years ago, or maybe more than that, I've been involved in professional boxing. I've had a license. I was quite young, so...
He asked me how I started, not how you started.
I know, but we did digress. But even Mikey, hold on, because I want to press pause for a second, because as we said, because I do, we obviously we want to talk about you.
Listen, like, let me have a bit of time, man. Come on,
we obviously want to talk to you.
I'll come back.
You are the one fighting. Yeah. But I also want to ask about Lucas, your younger son and your brother, because he just had a fight, which obviously he lost. Unfortunately, but a very close decision.
Very close.
For the English title. Mm. Actually, it's his second loss in a row.
Yeah.
But can I ask this? Because his fight before was in Belarus.
Right. So what happened is we got the lockdown and we were training. And I got offered a fight in Belarus for him. I looked at the fella, thought, yeah, okay, we'll go down there. We'll fight him. So we turned up. Lucas struggled to make the weight, but no excuses. If you go on to BoxRec, this is the funniest thing. If you go on to BoxRec and look at the scores, it looks like Luke, I don't think they gave him a round. And it was
You're talking about the one...
In Belarus.
Yeah, I think it was 78-74 twice and 78-75 once.
Right, you've got a good memory.
Yeah.
But like, they didn't... The judges weren't... It wasn't fair, you know. At the end of the day, he didn't get the decision. But in my eyes, he was still a winner. You know, he didn't lose the fight, you know.
You thought he won the fight?
Yeah.
Or you thought it was close?
It was a close fight, but I thought he just won the fight.
Thought he nicked it. You
know, he landed the more cleaner, better shots.
Okay.
But
in the fight, obviously it was with British commentators, so I was watching it from back home, and all the British commentators thought that he'd won quite comfortably until they had said the result. Like, they all had him probably win the majority of the rounds, Lucas, and that was me watching it from back home, so...
You guys just saw the Michael Fox fight that happened over in the States.
He boxes Gabriel
Sada.
No, the 3-0 guy, Mikhail Fox, is it?
Yeah, the 3-0 guy, and people were really upset about that. And also, there was a fight recently with Bunch against Figueroa on Showtime. Yeah. Again, another decision that was, a lot of people thought very, very suspect. So, this is one of the things in boxing, right? Mikey, we're going to go back and ask about the beginnings, but this is touching on something that is kind of difficult for a guy like you, because you look at your record, very few stoppages, right? You got, how many stoppages do you have?
Two.
Right. Out of 20 wins.
Yeah.
So people look at that and they're like, oh, this guy can't punch. Now, I don't necessarily think that's true. Looking at your record, it's interesting. I mean, you started, you fought a lot of guys with upside down records.
Yep.
The first real test you had was against Ryan Martin.
Yeah.
Okay. Not blue chip, by the way. Not from Tennessee, Ryan blue chip Martin.
Yeah, that's right.
Different Ryan Martin. But you fought Ryan from Swindon.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was like a real test.
I'll tell you, with Ryan Martin, we're the same age as amateurs, and he was like the superstar amateur from my age, up till probably about 17, 18.
Yeah.
Big puncher.
He was one of them guys that, like, 13 years old, he'd knock people out. He had a great amateur, like, junior pedigree. So when I got offered the fight, because I had my first 10 pro fights, I didn't earn a penny, I didn't get any opportunities or anything like that. I got to 10-0 like that, and it's like they handpicked me because he remembered me from the amateurs and
didn't knock anyone out.
Because he was the top boy and I was the average boy. He thought, right, okay, this is an easy win. Like, McKinson's not stopped anyone, and he's not stopped anyone, so he thought it'd be an easy win. And like, we went there into his hometown. I'm not going to let him speak because I just speak.
I love it.
This is the first time I've actually spoken in this podcast.
If people are just listening and can't see, his pops is raising his hand like it's class. He wants to get a word in. Go ahead, Mikey. I'm sorry.
He keeps trying to cut in and stuff like that. But the Ryan Martin fight, we went to his hometown. They were a very smug team. I was booed and abused coming to the ring. It was quite hostile. And in the fight, like, it was my first test, really. In the fight, I beat him quite comfortably. I was talking to him in the fight. I was, like, poking my tongue out to his corner, like, mentally. I ruined the whole team that night. And, yeah, that was my first, that was probably my first big moment in boxing.
Absolutely. Well, you really had, is it fair to say you've really had two, and it was that fight and also the Congo fight?
The Congo fight, yeah. It's just when I'm doubted, it means so much more to me.
Dude, I remember that week, because we spent quite a lot of time together,
yeah,
which was really fun. It was great. I mean, I hung out with your pops a lot. And by the way, for people listening, people might be confused with the McKinson name, Mikey McKinson, Michael Ballingall. Why do they have different names? But you are his father,
yes.
And you actually have the same name, and that's actually why you don't have the same name, because you didn't want people to get confused, right?
Yeah, it was confusing people, and it was just causing problems and that, you know, so.
Right.
So I am.
So that's your mom's maiden name is McKinson.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
So you go Mikey McKinson, so people don't, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so back to the story.
Yeah, so like, when we went to Swindon and you was talking about Gibraltar after that.
Yeah, well, just that you were so confident going into the Congo fight. I'm curious, because I know, you know, you did have an amateur career. You had about 50 amateur fights or so.
Yeah.
Not stellar.
But some good boys, though.
Yeah, but you did fight a lot of top opposition. Mm. But when did you, first of all, how old were you when you got involved with boxing? What was your first boxing match? Having a boxing, a father that's a boxing nut, because I will say you're a boxing nut. You love the sport.
I ain't got a chance to say, really.
How old was I? A couple of weeks old, Dad? I knew the stance from probably really young.
Can I just say something? When he was a little kid, it was the era of in England of Prince Nassim when he was a little kid. And so, like, he used to be videotapes. We'd put the videotapes on. He'd sit on his little high chair eating his food, watching Prince Nassim, you know? So that was the first part.
So you're blue blood. I mean, this is...
I was going to gyms alongside him from probably 5 years old.
Watching me get beat up and sparring and stuff.
Yeah, probably, like, just being around boxing. And even more so, I've been around pro boxing from young as well. I used to go to all the shows when I was young. So, like, I was going to gyms probably from five. Like, at the time, you had to be 11 to box. And I had my first amateur fight probably a couple of days after my 11th birthday. As soon as I was old enough, I was boxing, you know. So I've done it. I've been in boxing my whole life.
Are you a natural lefty, or did you learn to fight southpaw?
I'll tell you a secret here. I'm actually right-handed, and I can box both ways. I've always felt a lot more natural as a southpaw, but I can box orthodox as well, and I just haven't had to yet.
I'm curious if you're worried that you're too damn tricky and your name's not big enough for people to want to fight you, because that's what's happened here domestically. Now you're finally getting some shine. Mm. But, like, I wouldn't want to fight you. You're a tricky, you are hard to figure out. You really are. And you are a problem solver. That's why I love your name, The Problem. You're a problem for people and you're a problem solver.
Yeah, I'm in, look at my record, I'm in tough fights every time.
Now you are, yeah. I said, you started, you had a lot of upside down records that you fought. But after the Ryan Martin fight.
Cool, yeah, I've took test after test after test and on paper, they're hard fights, and I've made them look easy when I've been in there. They didn't look like the Chris Kongo fight, for example. On paper, it was a tough fight, and Chris is a good fighter, but in there, I felt so comfortable. I didn't really go through the gears in the fight, and that's not being disrespectful to Chris. One of the judges or two of the judges had it a lot closer than what the fight should have been. I thought I won the majority of the rounds there. I'm always taking challenges and I'm always being tested, but I just make it look easy.
What about the power issue? Let's go back to that. Do you think you do have pop, or do you think you just have fought guys that didn't want to engage?
Well, I've dropped 5 of my last 6 opponents.
Why couldn't you end it and take those judges out of it?
Yeah, well, people say I can't punch until they're either in there with me, fighting me, or unless they're sparring me and things like that, because I'm not a non-puncher. There's been a few times in my fights where I could have probably stopped them, but it's got to rounds 5, 6, 7. I'm probably already 5, 6, 7 rounds out, on the scorecards. Why do I need to take chances? I'm a very good boxer. I do what I do best. But when I have to, I will stop these guys. I know I can. Just these opponents are getting better and better. Their heads are getting harder and harder.
True.
I'm not sitting at the same level. I'm getting better opponents each time. If I was sitting at the same level, I'd be stopping a lot more people. But I don't want to sit at the same level. I'm ambitious and I just want to keep challenging myself.
You know, your pops was talking about Tony Oakey, and I know that... you also did a lot of training with, I was talking about Pac-Man, Floyd Moore, the lightweight, and also Mark Coombs, the super welterweight. Do you look up to those guys? And do you, I've seen you wear the Portsmouth FC shirt.
Yeah.
Would you love to defend it at Fratton Park?
I would love to fight on Fratton Park in my career, regardless. That is probably one of the main goals for me.
Yeah, I said defend. I know that you have a title, but obviously...
Yeah, just regardless, just fight the headliner show there. That's what I'd want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, with Floyd and Mark, when I started training with professionals from probably 14, 15. I've been with professionals since young, training alongside them, and they were the local pros when I was 15 years old. So they're the first local pros that I was training alongside and stuff. Still get Floyd's getting married next week. We're going to his wedding and stuff. So still speak to him.
Congratulations, Floyd.
Yeah.
You know, speaking about also that Ryan Martin fight, at the time you had a regular job too, right? And you have your daughter.
Yeah. So, I had a regular job up till I beat Colin Lyon. So I'd won my first two titles, the WBC Youth and the WBC International Silver, while still working a 9-to-5. And the Ryan Martin camp was probably mentally my toughest camp I had, because it was my first title fight, so it's the first proper training camp I had. But I had a newborn at home as well. So I had to balance working a 9-to-5, training twice a day, and having a newborn at the same time. Now, that was tough. That camp was mentally probably my toughest camp. For the first 4 months of my daughter's life, I never really was about, because I was waking up, we was training before I used to go to work, so I was waking up at probably 5, I'd go train, go to work all day, train again, and then go home and my daughter's asleep. So, and that was a tough camp. And then my next big title fight, Colin Lyons, later on in that year, I was still working full time. And
what was the job?
I was a campaign manager in a marketing company. And my employers, they back me now. They back me, they're one of my sponsors and stuff like that. So
speaking of, you're wearing a hat with the T, that's Trent, yeah?
That's Trent. It's a local clothing brand.
Just want to give a shout out to your local
shout
sponsor.
Out to Trent, yeah. But I quit after the Colin Lyons fight. I was I'm fighting these tough guys. These training camps are getting harder and I'm still working full time. And I took a massive risk. I handed in my notice from work Christmas 2017 with no guaranteed sponsor. I think we had a meeting with a sponsor in January, but nothing guaranteed or something. And I had a daughter as well, so I had responsibilities. So that was a massive gamble that I took at that time. Massive risk. Probably one of the biggest ones in my life, to be fair, because I've got responsibilities. And
Does your pops help with your daughter?
Yeah, he's a... at the time, well, you was a young granddad, weren't you?
Youngest granddad in Portsmouth. No,
young granddad. But yeah, he's got two grandkids. And a story about him. He's got two grandkids because I've got a daughter and my brother's got a daughter. But my dad's youngest daughter is actually younger than our kids. So, yeah. So my daughter's four.
My God.
My daughter's four, and she calls my dad's daughter, who's 18 months old, auntie. It's mad.
Yeah, that's great. I love it.
It's life.
It's a family affair.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's a very, very difficult, when Mikey first turned pro, his very first fight was in Belfast in the Devonish complex. We had to get sponsors to all chip in bits of money, like 200 quid here. It was really difficult. And going through his career to get into this point now, he started literally, he is from the bottom all the way to this stage now. With like, we can only thank the sponsors that even if someone has put 20 quid in to help towards his career, everybody's all a part of it to this day. But one of the most important sponsors that has helped us out in the recent times is HS Building Maintenance.
Yeah, they're the backbone, not just to my life, to my brother's life too, because they support us both to be able to train full time. Both of us, that like they help out. So
it's a massive difference now, yeah.
Oh, massive difference, massive difference. And yeah, without them, I can't do what I do. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be where I am without that company especially.
How's being a father now? Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, like it's a whole different motivation in my career. Like for me to be a good influence in somebody else's life, especially my daughter, is a good thing, and that makes me quite proud. So yeah.
Speaking of influences, you used to train with Ronnie Davies, yeah? Ronnie Davis, yes. that trained Chris
yes,
Eubank
yes,
Senior.
Yes, yes, yes.
Was he a big influence on you?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Big fan of his when I was a fan of boxing when I was a young man, and it's a bit of a funny one really because a friend of mine before Tony Oakey signed with Ronnie Davis and he couldn't drive, and he had, the first fight he had, my friend said, "Oh, would you better drive us up to the show?" And I had to go to Brighton to pick Ronnie Davis up, and I was like, of course I'll do it, you know what I mean? So I was all like a big boxing fan, so I drove down to from Portsmouth with my friend, picked Ronnie up, and we had to drive all the way to Telford. I can't remember the name of the place, and he boxed Matt Squiven. James Lee boxed Matt Squiven, and I can remember driving in the car all nervous, asking him all these questions about what happened here and what happened there. And yeah, Ronnie's he's had some real good experiences in boxing. He's an old timer. He's a gentleman. And yeah, he was the first person in boxing that I'd look up to and would learn off.
Yeah, I mean, to learn off an old timer like that must be really amazing. And Brighton, for people listening, Portsmouth is obviously a port town. It's in the name. And it's about driving, about an hour and a half in Brighton?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty close, but it's just the driving.
You know a lot about
Brighton. Yeah, well, I used to live down there in Brighton. I had a flat down there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a lot of driving there. Takes a while. Mm. A lot of roundabouts on the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
a lot of roundabouts.
Yeah. You say, obviously, Portsmouth's a port town, right? That really helped me in Gibraltar because there's a lot of like naval people and stuff out in Gibraltar. So when I went over there, there was loads of people from Portsmouth over there already, so I had quite a big support when we went to Gibraltar that people I didn't even know. Some I knew, some I didn't know. So when I turned up to the venue, everyone was wearing their Portsmouth tops and stuff, so I felt like I was at home in Gibraltar. And then and the night before the fight, there's a guy back home, he's in the Navy, and I didn't know he was there, but he was in the bar across the road from the Sunborn. he rounded up all of his mates and he messaged me on Instagram, said, go up onto the top deck, right? So I went up to the top deck and I looked down and they was all drunk and they were singing, oh, Michael, Mick, but loads of them outside the hotel the night before the fight. So people must have been like, oh, Mikey's popular over here. Do you know what I mean? So, like, Portsmouth being a port town really helped me in Gibraltar.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I was probably the most popular fighter on the show out there, really, because there was a lot of people from Portsmouth there.
What was it like growing up there? And I, you know, when we first started the conversation, I know I'm asking you a question, I'm jumping to you.
He's asking me right now.
But, because it was like, oh, you're born in Naples and this, but how did you end up in Portsmouth originally, the family? And then to you, what was it like growing up there?
Yeah, go on in.
Dad ended up getting a job down in Portsmouth, so okay. We just had to go where he's, you know what I mean?
Fair.
And it was a great place to grow up, with the beach and all that lot. I think as you get older and you get used to things, you don't think it's as, you know, other people turn up to Portsmouth and go, wow, you got the beach and the sea and all this.
Used to it.
And I'm used to it, you know, so... Yeah. Some good memories growing up in Portsmouth.
Could you live in a landlocked place? Like, could you live in a city that's not by the water?
Yeah. Okay. It's not country. Like, inside of me is a country man. I love the country. I love the grass and the big, like, hills and the
scenic,
trees. And the
scenic,
you know, my granddad was a farmer in just outside Mandeville in Jamaica. So maybe that's that. I've got a little bit of that in me. I don't know, but I love that type of thing. I'm not a city person. I love the country.
So what was it like for you growing up in Portsmouth?
It was good. I was quite a well-behaved, like when I was at school and stuff like that. I was quite well-behaved. My brother was the opposite. We were both...
Lucas was a little crazy.
Yeah, he was he was the naughty one. I was the good boy.
So how did you get the moniker The Problem?
Training early on with like the pros and stuff, and I used to be a problem to like the pros and stuff like that. So him and the rest of the people in the gym, like, this was before we knew about Adrian Broner, so I didn't copy that nickname off of him.
Didn't say you did. And did, to be honest, I know Adrian, I didn't even think of him.
No, but a lot of people
do. And you like I said, I love your name for you, because you do pose such a problem.
It suits me. It suits me.
You know, yeah. As a young age, obviously I had professionals in the gym. I had unbeaten fighters, but I also had seasoned journeymen that had gone in against everyone, you know. So what better can you do by a young lad jumping in the ring every now and again and sparring these lads that have been on the TV boxing? Sometimes with the journeymen, you can learn a lot out of them, how to survive defensive movements and things like that. And the durability of the fighters as well. Like, you know, you're born with that, I suppose, durability. But Mikey's grown up with that, and I had him in the gym all the time. So he always posed a problem, even when he was younger and smaller than the other lads. And he's got, Mikey is, from a young age, Mikey's always had a really good boxing IQ. And as he's got older, it's got a lot better. He can work things out. If there's a problem in front of him and he's struggling with a problem, he can fathom it out and then work out how to beat them. He
makes adjustments.
He can adjust. He's got a very good IQ, and everybody's got their own levels of learning, and he's got very, very good levels of learning. And that's what the problem, that's why he's a problem, and that's why people can't work it out. It's like with Floyd Mayweather, you can sit there and you can watch every single fight. We can all watch it. It's there for all of us to watch. But yet no one can work it out. You know, you can sit there and watch something, but no one can work it out. He's got an unbelievable IQ, and you see in some of the fights where he's struggling, and he always finds a way round adjustments, as you say, and that comes off the winner all the time. And it's all about that natural ability to read something because it's going along. You know, a lot of us coaches, we read something from the outside looking in, but someone that's got the ability can read it as it's going along. That's very difficult to do, and only certain people are born with that.
I had to develop that smart and that awkward style because I started training with the professionals at a young age. I was a kid. I was sparring men. Like, I didn't want to get hit by them men, so I naturally developed an awkward style, ways of not getting hit and stuff like that. And that's how I kind of... Because I was always a skillful amateur, not as awkward as what I ended up developing into.
Let's talk just for a second about your conditioning, because being a fighter like yourself, I think about a fighter like a Malinaji or like an Algieri or even a Yuri Foreman, guys that won titles, but guys that really didn't have a big pop.
Yeah.
And going into a fight like that, like you almost know off the bat, like you're going to go the distance, right? You have to go in thinking every time, I'm going to go the distance.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you just stay super fit?
I think it's like muscle memory, really, because I'm seasoned to do 10 rounds now. I'm like the king of the 10 rounders. I think this is my ninth scheduled 10 round fight. So I've done 8 already. 7 of them have gone the distance. So like in my head, I can do that no problem now. I'm ready to do 15 rounds. Like, especially that Congo fight, for example. In that fight, I was the one controlling the pace. I was pushing on when I had to, when my dad told me to. I finished strong. But you look at that fight, I could have done another 5-6 rounds because I was controlling the pace of everything, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm seasoned to go the distance, you know?
How proud are you of this guy?
Yeah, I'm proud of him, yeah. But I can't...
He said, but.
Yeah.
Lucas is the favourite brother.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
He doesn't pose any problems to me. So he's a problem in every way. So, but really, yes, I am proud of him. But just because we've had one fight on this platform, let's not get carried away with
it. Sure, sure. Eyes on the prize.
Yes, this is the beginning of it.
Right.
And we have to be focused, and Michael's focused. When we were on the boat, for instance, a lot of people would have been just... Wow, I'm here.
Starstruck.
Starstruck's the word.
No, you can't be like that.
Yeah, yeah. And no. Mikey was like, look, I'm staying in my room. I'm not here to make friends of anyone. I'm here to change my life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, look, speaking of, I mean, listen, you're at a great level now, and you're doing very well. You're ranked number 4 in the world by the WBO, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. But then you look at number 3, you got Mikey Garcia. Yeah. Okay. You look at number 2, you got Sean Porter. You look at number 1, you got Virgil Ortiz, who's in a great fight this weekend against Egidius Kavalauskas.
Yeah.
And then the champ is Terrence Crawford.
You're so good at them pronunciations. Yeah.
So you got Bud Crawford at number 1, and that's a murderer's row right there.
Yeah.
There's no easy touch. There's no easy touch. No. And there are levels.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be honest. Look, I think you're quite a great boxer, and I love seeing what you've done so far, but that's a big jump.
Yeah.
To those names.
Yeah.
And that's where you are. So yeah, you can't get complacent. You can't.
No, I've got the target on my back now. I went to Gibraltar and there was no pressure on me. I had nothing to lose at the time and everything to gain. Now, like on the A side, I've got that target on my back and I've got something to lose now, you know? So the mentality is even stronger. Like, it's took me this long to get to this stage and this long to be on platforms like this. Like, I'm not going to fall now. Do you know what I mean? And that is my motivation. That is my motivation. It's took me so long to get here. Like, I want to stay here.
What do you know about Brunovsky?
He's very confident. Like, I know that most of his fights, I don't even think he's fought anyone with a negative record. They've all been winning records, like the majority of his fights. He's obviously had the one defeat to Josh Kelly.
Josh Kelly, yeah.
He lost. Josh is a very skillful fighter. And
Knocked him down quite a few times in that fight,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and did everything but stop him. But since then, he's coming off some real good knockout wins.
Yeah, his last two fights since that, he's won by knockout.
Yeah, an 11-0 in that. And he also knocked out Sirotka in 4 rounds as well. So he's going to be very confident. He's going to be very hungry. But they all are until it's...
Correct.
Until it's 5-6 rounds and they're chasing me on the scorecards and stuff like that. It always happens, you know. So they're all going to be confident, but it's going to be the same result as they all are. It's going to be a McKinson win.
Is it tough to see your son in there fighting? Or are you just so used to it now, it's not even a thing?
Well, he's my son. So obviously, and at the level, the last probably 6 or 7 fights have all been, well, since the Ryan Martin fight, bar one in the middle, like the warm-up when you first with MTK, they've all been dangerous fights where it could ruin everything. And, you know, So being a father, and even if he wasn't my son, I'd still have that same feeling, because we're stepping into, you know, you're not fighting journeyman anymore. You're not fighting 100% win. You know, it's against you a bit. And how many unbeaten fighters have you fought?
My last three have been unbeaten. I think maybe four or five unbeaten, but like I've fought like ones with one loss and about 15 wins and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think since the Ryan Martin, there's been a lot of tough fighters.
I think if you look at my last six opponents, the combined records probably only had like four losses and like 100 wins or something like that. It's something ridiculous.
So the answer to that question, yeah, of course, but it's the same thing. If you didn't have that feeling, you wouldn't be 100% serious about it. You need that little bit of an element of worry to make you
100%
think, right.
It's keeps same you as on your toes.
Yeah. So yeah, of course. But with all my fighters, I get that when they have to step up to this type of thing, you know. So. Yeah.
Let's go back to you just for a second. and you don't have to answer these questions, but you know, you talk about how you've never been to New York. I know you want to go to New York super bad. Mm. We've talked about it a lot, but there's a reason why you haven't been there, right?
There's a reason why. I mean, I've been to America before. There's a reason why. Don't really want to talk about it, to be truthful, but I really want to get to the USA. Not just for myself, but for my sons and for my other fighters as well.
There's going to be a time when I'm going to have to fight in the USA. Yeah. Like, I'd love to fight in America. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what will happen then?
Hopefully I'll be able to get over there, you know. So and also it's family. I've got a hell of a lot of family. And we talk on social media and stuff like that. Well, come on, Michael, come over. And the thing, you like my American accent? That's quite good. That
I don't know about that, but
okay, sorry, man, sorry. But the thing is, I really want to get over there. There's a lot of boxing over there. I want to be a part of it. I've got quite a few contacts over there as well through the boxing and stuff, which I've just not been able to get over to the States. So. That's my main thing to do in the next few months, or by the next year sometime, to be able to get over to the States again. And that, I've been to Miami, Hollywood, Florida. I've been there, Fort Lauderdale, that sort of way. I've been there once before, years and years ago, when I was really, really young. So
I respect your wishes to not talk about it, Mikey. I'm going to jump back to you really quick. I know that boxing has been your life since you've been in the high chair.
Yeah.
If we could just have a crystal ball and look forward, just fast forward. Okay. Multiple division world champ, whatever it is the accolades that you win. Where do you see yourself in a life after boxing? What would you like to do?
See, I don't really know much apart from boxing. I'm not really good at a lot of things. So I'd probably stay involved in
commentator.
I'm not a good talker like you.
He's doing well.
I'm getting better. I'm quite a shy guy naturally. I'm actually quite a shy guy. Like, I'm still getting used to interviews and stuff like this. I hate press conferences. That is my worst one, where there's like loads of cameras and the microphone, loads of people looking at you. That's like the worst.
Well, let's get this straight. This is not a press conference, and this is not an interview. This is banner.
Yeah, this is just cool.
Mates chopping it up.
Yeah. I'd probably maybe like to open my own gym or something, and like something to do with boxing, because I know boxing. You know what I mean?
Do what you know.
I've been in boxing my whole life. Like, that's the only thing I do know.
I love it. I really admire you, and I love your attitude and your focus. And again, you know, I'll never forget it, because that week in Gibraltar, you know, obviously was a great card, but that specific fight to me was the sleeper. Mm. I was so looking forward to that fight. Two undefeateds, two really avoided fighters in a domestic undefeated clash.
Really confident fighters.
Super, both were
great build-up.
Yeah, oh, great, man. And I remember Congo was super... super confident.
Good condition as well.
Oh, top. Mm. Top. And he can punch. He could crack. Mm. And you just handled it. It was great. You did what you said you were going to do. So hats off to you for that. So, look, we've got some fan questions. Are you guys okay to answer a couple fan questions?
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, great. At pup_1987 asks Mikey, it's clear you've grafted the hard way. How much of it is down to inner self-belief?
I think, like... You can't be successful without self-belief. I think that plays a big part in it. I get my confidence from my hard work. I know if I, that's why I don't cut any corners in camp or in anything. I'm so dedicated. So by the time I get on the scales the day before the fight, you see how confident I am. And that's all down to my hard work and my work ethic.
Yo, speaking of Premyslav Ranovski, the last fight that we did, the Josh Kelly fight, he had to strip down to make weight.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of years ago.
I'm having fun on the weight this time. Like, brilliant. Like, I'm so comfortable right
Yo,
now.
Mate, you were talking about food. What's your go-to? What's like your, when like fight's done?
Right, yeah.
You can eat whatever you want.
So like everyone, like, has all these cravings and what they look forward to the most after a camp, right? And I'm so boring, but I look forward to bread. Just bread, like toast, just buttered toast and just simple things like that. I'm a big bread lover. And
what about beans on toast?
Yeah, I love beans on toast. Things like that, like simple things are what I like. I'm a big bread lover. And this time, my nutritionist, for the first half of my camp, I was actually having bread in my diet.
Oh, nice.
For the first time ever. And I've actually enjoyed the diet I've been on this time. Like, shout out to my nutritionists. I've got two of them. They've been brilliant because I've enjoyed the diet I've been on.
Shout them out if you want.
Yeah, Greg Allison and Jack Coke. They've been brilliant. And I've enjoyed this diet like really well. I've been eating well all the way through. I've been having steak for dinner every night and all stuff like this. So, and I've made weight better than ever.
Can you cook?
The only time you see me in the kitchen, I can.
The shade.
No, he doesn't even live with me. So he don't even know.
Could your pops cook? Can Michael cook?
He can have a cook. Yeah, he can have a cook. I haven't had his cooking in
Michael,
years.
What did you used to cook?
Go and tell him.
So when me and my brother was at school, we know we would have the same dinner every night. It was like we was dieting 365 days a year. Like, we'd come home and it'd be chicken. He'd cook the chicken, the jerk chicken and stuff like that, and rice. But like, and vegetables. It was like every single day when we was teenagers.
That's good. I could get into that. Oh, mate, if you come to Brooklyn, I got a jerk chicken place in Brooklyn, man. It's better than Kingston.
Yeah, really?
I'm telling you, it's unreal. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it'll takes a roof. It's so good, so good. Okay, let's see. Let's get to the next question. Robert Kays asked Michael, at which point of a fight night does the father role swap out for trainer? You can't run that corner on emotion, I suspect.
Yeah, well, you just the thing is, I've been training fighters years before I've been training my own sons in real fights. So you just switch off. He's your fighter, you know. I'm emotional with all my fighters. If things are not looking good and this and that, I can get emotional. But, you know, I'm a boxing trainer at the end of the day, and I'm your trainer, and that's it. You know, and at the end, when the fight's finished, I'll become your dad again, you know. So, yeah.
Even in the gym, there's no, like, father-son relationship in the gym. It's trainer-boxer.
Strictly business.
Yeah.
You guys are able to compartmentalize.
It was a bit tougher on us in the gym than the other like fighters, like being like obviously our dad and stuff, a bit tougher and a bit stricter on us in the gym.
Do you know what it is? It's like I can't show other people that I'm being good to them, you know, and letting them get away with stuff and then being strict on them. I have to treat everyone exactly the same.
He's not one of them dads that's like, oh, my boy's this, my boy's that. He's like our biggest critic. He'd rather like critique us than say what we've done well.
He tells you when you got spinach in your teeth.
Yeah, that's it.
You're always trying to get the best out of them. So you have to be, you can't be, oh, yeah, too much. You know what I mean? Every now and again, praise them, but always try and get more. Don't be always happy, you know?
Well, like we just talked about, he's, you know, ranked number four, but who's after that? There's levels.
Yeah.
So you're trying to step him up.
Yes, of course.
How many days a week do you train?
So it all changes of what I'm doing each week. Mm, so on average, probably 6 days when I'm in camp, 6 days on average, but he'll tell me when I'll need, like, go and rest for 3 days. Like, he will tell me that.
And what about sparring? Like, coming up to a fight, like, when do you stop?
It was always really a week before, but now it's like 10 days, 2 weeks before we'll have our, our last spar. So I had my last spar about a week ago today. It was
we're just concentrating on stop the sparring maybe 2 weeks, 10 days, and then concentrate on your diet and stuff. Because when you're doing that and you're sparring, you can feel a lot weaker. What's the point in sparring someone when you're weaker? Just start the diet and end it 2 weeks before, then start your dieting. You know what I mean? And give yourself a bit of time to recover as well. Rest from it.
Do you guys travel around the country looking for sparring partners, or do they come to you?
Since he was 12 years old.
You've been traveling around?
Yeah. Manchester, all over the place.
Philadelphia.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I couldn't go there though. But
I've been to different countries on my own sparring and stuff. He'll send me to this place, to this
Spain,
place.
Went to Spain that time.
Yeah, I've been about. I've Italy. Sparred some good names. Italy. Yeah.
All right, let's see here. All right, the last question is from Julio Baptiste. He asked Mikey, I've watched your last few fights after seeing your name in the WBO rankings and became a fan. Do you concede that you'll likely have to fight in the US for one of these big names in the next few years? Is that a goal of yours?
Yeah, I think it's a goal for anyone, really, to go over to the States and fight. That's a big goal of mine. I'd love to go over there. It's definitely something that I'd like to do in the near future. So hopefully you can get out there and stuff. But yeah, shout out Julio Baptiste.
Yeah, it's good to know that he's got fan bases that just not in England and all over the world. Yeah. That's good.
Absolutely.
To know.
Shout out
respect to you.
Shout out to all these fans, man. I really appreciate it. And you know, I got a couple just ending questions for you that I'm just curious about as a fighter. Because, you know, again, I've said this so many times, but boxing's such a tough sport for a ton of reasons. But one of the things that's very difficult is typically, you know, fighters don't have that many fights, right? So each fight's just so important. Whereas like a footballer, you know, you got another match, you got teammates, basketball, baseball, you have a team, different things like that. Not that they're not all important, but the night before a match, let's say you don't sleep well or just – sometimes you eat a meal and it just doesn't hit right, or you just don't feel. How do you, like, you have to just, it doesn't matter. Cause like you still have to, you got to walk when it's time to walk, right?
Yeah,
TV. TV tells you to walk when you're walking. How do you deal with that? Do you typically sleep really well before a fight? Like, are you mentally, I think the mental aspect is what I'm trying to get at here. I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you prepare yourself mentally for knowing that you are about to get in a fist fight with another trained man who's hard as nails? You know, it's something that most people would literally turn and run from at every chance they can get, yet you go into it. This is your job.
Yeah, of course. But I'm experienced. Like, and I stay as relaxed as possible. All fight week, I'm trying to stay relaxed and as cool as possible, you know. And then when we have to be serious and we have to focus and stuff like that, when we're in the changing rooms, that's when it changes for me. That's when it changes and the nerves
you flip
hit.
You flip the switch.
Yeah, I flip the switch. The nerves hit a little bit and I'll have that. Then butterflies in my stomach and that's when it gets serious and that's when it gets real and that's when it gets exciting.
And the last question that I have, I guess kind of for both of you guys, do you have any regrets so far in your career and what you've done? Or are you happy with where you are? Is there something that you could change if you look back?
He's trying to.
Oh, Lord.
I don't have any regrets. Obviously, I've had to do it harder than the average person. I've had to take more risks than the average person and stuff like that. So there was times which I hated in my career, and there's times where I was just like, oh.
Yeah, but don't, I'm not to interrupt, but I'm going to interrupt, but didn't that, because I've had a lot of those.
Yeah, yeah.
But I relish that now. Yeah, that's what makes me so strong.
That's what I'm saying.
So like, doesn't that help you?
That's why now I have no regrets, because it's even better to finally be like promoted by Matchroom and stuff like that. So I'm happy with how my career is going to be guided. And
yes,
I've got a great management team in MTK, great promotional team in Matchroom. So everything's worth it in my career. Now, all of them hard times that I had, I didn't earn a penny for my first 10 pro fights. I've had to be the B-side several times. I've fought guys in their hometown. I've had to fight this guy that was going to beat me, this guy that's going to beat me. So I've done it harder than a lot of them guys. So to be where I am now, it's such a good feeling, you know.
It's savory.
Yeah, such a good feeling.
Yeah, you're savoring
it. You appreciate
it
more.
Yeah, I do. And it that's why it means so much to me. It probably means a lot more to me than it does most of these other guys.
Michael, what about you?
I've got no regrets whatsoever. I mean, look where he's got. So, you know, I've not really done anything wrong. I mean, I've actually sacrificed myself as a manager because I couldn't get him the fight. So I got him some... the last fight he had with Colin Lyons was with me for the WBC International Silver, and I thought the phone would not stop ringing. But no one would... I couldn't get a fight. So we had a chat, and I decided, right, let's go with MTK. They can make things happen. And he went with MTK, and look where he is now. So, you know, I've got no regrets of doing it. You know, when you have that discussion with someone to sacrifice, if it all goes wrong, you got to say, well, you know, we made that decision. We have to stand by it, but we done that, and it all ended up good. So, you know, I've got no regrets at all. Apart from he won't let me speak as much on the podcast.
Guys, I'll tell you what, man. I love seeing both of you, really. It's been so great catching up again.
And been a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to your fight. So we got Mikey the Problem McKinson, Michael Ballingall, thank you so much for joining me. And for the fans out there. Yes, absolutely. And for the fans out there, I do have a little bit of a tidbit. This week we have, speaking of Manchester, because we talked about Manchester, you're up there looking for sparring partners, Zelfa Flash Barrett is on the card. So that's really exciting.
Very exciting.
So he'll be on the card. He'll be featured on the card. And thanks for tuning in, everyone. And we'll be back tomorrow with more Matchroom Radio.
Ciao.
For now.